Welcome back to Looks Like New, the radio podcast of the Media Economist Design Lab at the University of Colorado Boulder. I'm Julia Martins, Associate Director of MedLab, and this is the show where we ask old questions about new technology, exploring how the tools shaping our world connect to timeless concerns about power, justice, and human flourishing. Today, we are diving into questions that cut to the heart of how work is changing in the digital age. Who actually owns the platforms that increasingly govern our economic lives? What happens when drivers, delivery workers, and other gig workers decide they want more than just flexible schedules? They want genuine ownership and control. And how do we build economic systems that distribute power and prosperity more fairly? Our guest is Min Sun Ji, director of the Rocky Mountain Employee Ownership Center in Denver. Min Sun has been at the forefront of supporting workers who are choosing to take ownership, literally, of their economic futures through cooperatives and employee-owned businesses. Her organization recently helped launch something remarkable, a drivers-owned cooperative that is challenging the extractive model of traditional rideshare apps. What makes this work so fascinating is how it connects cutting-edge platform technology with one of humanity's oldest economic innovations, cooperation. While Silicon Valley builds systems that concentrate wealth and power, Min Sun and the drivers she works with are asking a different question entirely. What if the people doing the work actually owned the platforms they depend on? This isn't just about ride-sharing. It's about reimagining the relationship between workers and technology, exploring whether the digital economy can become a force for economic democracy rather than just another way to extract value from people's labor. Min Sun, welcome to Looks Like New. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting.
Can you tell us about your professional background and what initially drew you to the field of employee ownership and cooperative development?
Yeah, I have been a labor organizer all my life. I'm from South Korea, so I work with very low-wage workers in South Korea before coming to the United States. And in the United States, I organize immigrant day laborers, janitors, and domestic workers. And now I'm organizing rideshare drivers. So my journey has been a labor organizer all my life. So this is what I've been doing for decades.
Was there a particular moment or experience in your life that solidified your commitment to this work?
Yeah, from very young age, I was very committed to working for economic justice. And the best way is to organize and work with low-wage workers. And with that commitment, you know, I've been going through a lot of different journey of work. And I was at the labor union. I was a founder of a worker center right here in the Denver area. And also now, you know, I'm the executive director of a Rocky Mountain Employee Ownership Center, which promote employee-owned businesses. So, you know, if you really look at my life journey, you know, you see where I am right now, because, you know, there have been a lot of changes, you know, from direct organizing to now working on creating more employee-owned businesses. And all those are issue related to each other. But I'm very happy to, you know, what I'm doing.
And for those unfamiliar with your organization, can you explain a little more about the primary work of the Rocky Mountain Employee Ownership Center? Like, what types of businesses and sectors do you typically work with? And what does your support process look like?
Yeah, so Rocky Mountain Employee Ownership Center is one of the oldest employee-owned business promotion nonprofit right here in Colorado. Founded in 2012, we help businesses to convert to employee-owned businesses, such as worker co-ops or ESOP, or now employee ownership trusts. So we come in to support those business and owners who wants to retire but who have no choice but to sell their business. We do believe that selling their businesses to employees and workers is one of those concrete ways to achieve more just equity for workers. So that's kind of what we have done since 2012. So with that, we have a lot of different projects. Co-op conversion is one issue where we work directly with companies to convert their company into employee-owned businesses. We also have a cooperative incubation project where we work with very marginalized community members, such as drivers and home care workers. So we do work on incubating the cooperative. And Drivers Cooperative is one of the largest co-op incubation projects of RMUSC. But we also do work on social cooperative project, which is very fascinating and a new policy work that we are doing. And Julia, you are one of the leaders right here in Colorado who is trying to promote that as well. So it's exciting to create a new policy that will support marginalized community members, you know, who are forming cooperative. And social cooperative will say, hey, those cooperatives that are formed by marginalized community members, such as drivers and home care workers, should be categorized as a social co-op and then, you know, get a little more benefits because that will that kind of economy will actually lift their life. So we work on a lot of different policy as well. And education is, of course, another big piece of what we do to promote employment businesses right here in the Rocky Mountain region.
Yes, for our audience, it's remarkable that Colorado is a leader in the in this field. Colorado has the first active public office in the country dedicated to employee ownership. We have the Colorado Employee Ownership Office that is creating public policies for further this mission of help workers to gain ownership on the businesses depend on. And, you know, but can you expand a little bit on that and how is the Rocky Mountain region particularly suited for employee ownership initiatives? Are there unique economic or cultural factors at play?
Yeah, Colorado is actually one of the best states right now to support companies to convert to employee-owned businesses. And also, Colorado is one of the best in incubating worker cooperatives as well. So with the support from the government, I think we are in a really good place to really promote worker-owned businesses. That's kind of what RMUSC has done since 2012. With the government support, it actually speed up a lot of different companies to convert to employee-owned businesses. So since 2018 and 19, we've been actually leading to create, convert so many different companies into employee-owned businesses, which is very, very exciting. So RMUSC comes in to work with those companies that are interested in converting to employee-owned businesses, and we help them go through step-by-step technical assistance processes to make sure that they successfully convert their business to cooperative or ESOP or EOT.
This is fantastic. And, you know, when we have in mind that most of the business owners are baby boomers and they're about to retire, many describe as a silver tsunami ahead. What is going to happen to all these local businesses, all these workers that depend on their business? And the reality, many, many of these businesses lack a succession plan. What is happening after their founder moves away from the company? I mean, likely mergers and acquisitions are going to happen. And all the tax dollars, all the money that stays in our local economy and make our local economy so strong may just leave this state. And it's an interesting strategy to fortify our local economy is to keep it in the hands of people that live here and in contribute to their communities and, you know, keep the economy in the state strong. This is fantastic.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at the actual national statistics, only 15% of the business owners could actually sell their businesses, only if they are actually a bigger right size. So what this means is that 85% of all the small business owners end up closing their businesses. You know, owners want to retire, but, you know, they end up closing the door. this means that actually there is no job, you know, for those businesses. That's why we are coming in to prevent business closure, because there are other ways for the owners to sell their business. But at the same time, there are a better way for employees to take over the business that they are very used to running and becoming the owner. And I think this is a very powerful way, and it's a sort of the win-win situations, you know, where the, you know, owner of the business can, you know, sell their business to employees, and employees can also become the owners of the business. So we are, you know, coming in to educate the business owners, the baby boomers. In Colorado, over 65% of the business are now, you know, approaching retirement age. So what's going to happen right here? So again, this is another way for business owners to think about.
And keep their legacies.
Exactly.
Most of these companies have been built over decades of sweat and tears, and seeing their legacy continue through the hands of people that helped building in the first place. It's such a beautiful strategy. And you know, converting existing businesses into employee ownership is an interesting route. But like you mentioned before, incubating new businesses that's already from the beginning distributing ownership and control is another possibility. And that's what happened with the Drivers Co-op, right? So can you explain a little bit how did the Rocky Mountain Employee Ownership Center first came into contact with the drivers who were interested in forming a co-op? Like, what was the initial conversation like? What specific challenge or frustration were the drivers facing that made them seek alternatives to traditional rideshare employment?
Yeah, so co-op incubation project happened in 2022. We think that creating a cooperative is another way to empower low-wage and marginalized community members. With that mindset, we start thinking about what it looks like to organize very vulnerable rideshare drivers right here in Colorado. There was already an effort in New York City back in 2021 and 2022 to initiate a driver's cooperative. And I was deeply engaged in working with that New York team. And we thought that that would be cool ideas to bring their models to Colorado, because the reality is that thousands of drivers are working so many hours, but not many people really know, you know, how little money a lot of drivers get. So we come with a mindset that it is really critical to organize these drivers to a worker cooperative. So that's kind of how the project got started in 2022. And obviously, it took us 2 years to form a cooperative. A lot of organizing happened at the airport, talking with the drivers to see whether this is something that they like to do. And a lot of drivers love the idea, and they want to create their company. That's how we are just supporting drivers to run this company.
Beyond the possibly better wages, what is the appeal for drivers to join the co-op?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the very first appeal is that they agree that they deserve to receive higher wages. And if actually they form a cooperative, that is possible, because, you know, this cooperative is their company, meaning that a lot of the majority of the ride income will become driver's income. So people love that idea. Second, they love the idea that they own the business, right, together collectively. You know, a lot of sort of the rideshare drivers right here in the United States, in Colorado, are actually immigrants and people of color from all over the world. So it's really exciting for these, you know, new immigrants and people of colors, and of course Americans, coming together to create a collective company together. So they love the idea of ownership of the company. Third part was more democracy, that, you know, it's not like it's their place. That means that they have a space that they can come to and they are engaged in a lot of different marketing effort as well, and they love that Democratic part as well.
Can you, maybe our audience is not as familiar with cooperatives, explain how they're different from other businesses, why is it different?
So worker cooperative is a business that is run and managed by employee owners. So that is a sort of the definition of the worker co-op. With that definition, our drivers will be the owner of this driver's co-op. And we have thousands of driver members right now with about 2,000 more onboarding. So this is a very collective business model. Drivers will get one vote, one person, one vote principle. And actually next week, we are electing board members. And it's just super exciting to see 13 candidates coming to be the candidates for the board seats. So it's an exciting moment. So drivers cooperative as a worker co-op gives that opportunities to drivers to be part of governance and leadership structure.
And make decisions that benefit them.
Mm-hmm. And our board members are all drivers, so making decisions.
This is fantastic. And like I remember briefly about this process in New York and how that started there. It got the attention of the New York Times. It was huge in popularity of like this alternative model. Can you talk a little bit about how that it started there and what was the motivation? I remember they had a huge campaign for fundraising, a crowdfunding that was very successful.
Yeah, so the drivers cooperative in New York is the very first one in the United States, you know, that actually start the movement, right? That ride share drivers can be an owner of the business. And they raised a $1.7 million from crowd funding, which is one of the largest crowdfunding income that any worker co-ops can imagine. So it was a really exciting moment. And based on their inspirations, we want to do the same thing right here in Colorado, because rideshare drivers share the same common problems of long hours of driving, but you know they lacked a good working, you know, good income and wages. So we want to do the same thing right here in Colorado. And the reason actually we could do is that, you know, I was deeply engaged in the New York Drivers Co-op as a consultant in early stage as well. So I was very inspired by that model. And obviously our drivers in Colorado was super excited about that possibility. And it is not only just Colorado either. We get a lot of requests from many different cities. We are going to have a meeting with Chicago, Pennsylvania, and Baltimore, and other cities that are interested in creating a similar model. So there is a national movement that is happening right here. In Colorado, we are a little bit different in that we are the very first one that actually have utilized on-demand app and try out here. So I guess we will share all the trial, error, success, failure, everything with other cities.
This is amazing. And it makes me think what, you know, this interest from other cities, but also the success of the initial crowdfunding in New York, it makes me think people are craving an alternative. Even as consumers, as users, mm-hmm. we want something different. And we want to know that we are empowering workers, people that within our communities to do better, to have a better life. And yes, and we have, I think most people are starting to recognize the pitfalls and the limitations of the main actors and the way they exploit labor and finding a way of still providing that service that brings so much comfort daily for many, many people, still enjoy that service, but knowing that that money is going to the workers, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think this is a national problem, right, that every rideshare driver is going through right now. That's why we are excited to share our model with other cities because, you know, we are in this together, right? So it's very important for us to share what is happening right here with our alternative app and how other cities can also create a similar models using an alternative app to support rideshare drivers. So I know that within a couple of years, more cities will actually have a cooperative.
And it's an interesting application of technology in this space and the willingness to share, like you said, the pathway of building a successful platform so others can use and others can also empower their work. And can you walk us through a little bit the process of how you supported the formation of the Drivers Co-op? What were the key stages and milestones? You know, and what legal, financial, operational difficulties did you help the drivers navigate in establishing the co-op? Can you expand on that?
Yeah, so Drivers Cooperative Colorado is a co-op incubation program of the Rocky Mountain Employee Ownership Center. This means that my organization, Rocky Mountain Employee Ownership Center, will work as a fiscal sponsor, but at the same time provide all the support needed. Through that models, we help up raising capitals and funding for the Drivers Cooperative. We support drivers with leadership training. We support drivers to set up their own governance structures, and we support them with co-op education. So we have a very step-by-step processes so that drivers will actually take ownership of this Drivers Cooperative. That's why I said it took us 2 years to actually have a very strong infrastructures of our Drivers Cooperative. Obviously, we went through a lot of error and trial at that stage, but by now, I think that our driver leaders have a very clear ideas about their roles and responsibility and how they can actually exercise their leadership through our own structure. So we provide every assistance, especially recruiting drivers, leaders was a very key responsibility that we did. That means that we were on the ground organizing drivers to the meeting. But at the same time, helping them with the funding was really critical. That's why we could actually open up the drivers co-op with the funding support so that our drivers can actually focus on driving on the roads with this alternative app. So yeah, there are a lot of different processes that we have to go through.
I think this is, people may underestimate how far you can go through education. People may think, well, if they're business owners, but they don't have a business degree, they don't have business experience, financial experience, how they're going to make a successful business? Well, with the right support and having the education, this is how important it is to having incubating programs like yours to provide that knowledge and empower them with the tools they need to successfully run their business.
Yeah, we've been having a lot of fun with the drivers. It's amazing to see our board president and a driver who is running this whole show and at the meeting. So again, we actually provide all the training necessary so that they can actually run the business. So it's been a long journey, but I think it's very meaningful because at the end of the day, you want to actually feel that drivers get empowered. There are many different ways of feeling that empowerment, I think. One way is that, of course, when their wages go up, and that's one way that they get empowered. And second, they really feel the feeling of ownership over their businesses. And I cannot tell you how amazing our driver leaders have been. They are going everywhere to advertise about their business. handing out, you know, flyers and stuff like that at many different places. Just watching them doing all those activities, I feel very, I don't know, very happy to see.
Proud.
Also proud, actually, really feel proud to see those workers stepping up and running the show.
I mean, of course, they have skin in the game and they invested. This is one of the proven benefits and advantages of the cooperative model, is this ownership embodiment, and which brings job retention, resilience. People are committed to the business. They just don't see themselves as employees, but they're in ownership of their own labor, and they're committed to make it successful. Mm-hmm. That's why we have so many examples of long-term cooperatives operating the market everywhere. I've just returned from a field trip in Italy, where the cooperative movement is particularly strong, and it's just so interesting to see how old those structures are and how successful they have navigated many economic crises. So this is also a pathway in bringing this economic resilience, hopefully, to the larger economy in our state if we have more structures like the Drivers Co-op.
I think one of the things that is really unique about the Drivers Co-op is that it takes a village to organize a platform worker co-op. And I think it's very, very exciting. But at the same time, it takes a lot of energy and time. Why? Because we actually have members up to 1,000 right now. But this number will go up to 3,000 very quickly within months. What this means is that we need to make sure that we build a very strong infrastructure, organizational capacities to make sure that all drivers are equipped with all the information that they do need so that they can actually exercise their ownership. So as you know, we are living in a platform economy. That's why cooperatives such as a Drivers Cooperative right here in Colorado and New York and maybe other cities is really important, because we have to keep up with what is happening with our economy, right? You know, 10 years, 20 years ago, perhaps everybody used job placement centers to look for job if they want to get a side job. But now, everybody's utilizing the app to get another side gig work. So that's why we are actually keeping up with the change of the economic patterns to make sure that we are also organizing platform as well, tools to organize gig workers as well. I know that a lot of people say, well, that is almost impossible, Min-san, because it costs a lot of money and, you know, there's no way that, you know, you guys can do it. And yes, of course, it costs a lot of money to develop that technology and to own that platform or to use that platform. But the idea, why not? You know, we can, you know, do so much with what is happening right now with the app as well. So when the global companies are utilizing app to profit, right, we should also find a way to organize those gig workers utilizing the platform and app. So that's why this Drivers Cooperative is a very, very important project for all of us. Because although we lack funding, still we have the ideas and commitments to organizing gig workers who are utilizing platform. We just cannot be the slavery of this platform, right? We have to find a way to organize those workers who are using the platform. So there are better ways to make that platform better for the workers.
Yeah, the funding availability is a huge issue when we are playing in this market that is very VC-driven. And once it's venture capital-driven, many of the most startup projects in the platform economy, they are responding to the interests of their investors. So it's fundamentally different when we are trying to build a project that is responding to the needs and the interests of the workers and not the investors. So, you know, what about pricing and availability? How does the co-op remain competitive while providing better conditions for the drivers? What are the challenges right now?
So our new app was launched in July 2025. So we've been running this alternative app for a month. It's exciting. Our workers and riders, I can also tell you how thankful we are to riders, supporters who are using our app, because, you know, riders have to support a local initiative such as a driver's co-op so that our drivers can actually provide good service. But challenge is that, you know, it is kind of like a chicken and egg problem. You know, we do need a lot of drivers who are available to provide service. But at the same time, we do need lots of riders who may need that service, right? So it's a sort of a chicken and egg problem that because we are new to this platform, there are not many riders who know about this unique locally owned app. So our drivers can be sometimes frustrated, right? Because, hey, there's not much, you know, ride request. So I think as a newcomer, I think as a new company, I think we are facing that challenge of sort of the egg and chicken dilemma. But with time and patience and consistent marketing effort, we do believe that, you know, there is a room for us to support and provide service to Coloradans and other people visiting Colorado.
I believe it's only a matter of time for people to catch a wind of this is happening, this is a possibility, and engage in alternative pathways. And from the user experience perspective, how does the co-op app or service compare to other major platforms? What can riders expect?
Yeah, so our app is very similar to the app by other rideshare companies. So riders can book it for their ride for tomorrow or today in a later time. So the app has a booking feature, but at the same time, it has on-demand functions so that, you know, people can order a ride. So it is very similar to other rideshare companies. So in that regard, our features, our functionality of the app is pretty excellent, you know, as a alternative app in Colorado. So our riders and supporters are just booking or they just order a ride on that spot. Another commitment for our drivers co-op is not only to provide service to people, you know, who need on-demand or pre-scheduled service. We are very committed to providing service to marginalized communities, such as the elderly and the disabled. That's kind of our uniqueness comes, right? Obviously, we all come with ideas to provide more jobs for the drivers, but our drivers will be happy to provide service and support to other marginalized communities. So we are also working on getting contract from other nonprofit serving previously incarcerated peoples or elderly and the people with a disability. So we are working very closely with some of the nonprofits to provide service. And our app also has a wheelchair accessible vehicle option as well. So in the future, we want to make sure that anybody has access to our app as well.
So in terms of the services seems similar to other competitors in terms of the service being provided, but I would argue that there is a different user experience by knowing you're contributing to something much more meaningful at the end of the day.
You know what, actually, riders are really happy knowing that actually our drivers are getting 80% of the trip fare. That is a huge income increase for drivers. And also, we are very transparent in terms of how much money goes to drivers and how much actually money comes to cooperative to operate their business. So we are very transparent, and I think a lot of riders love that fact that we are very transparent, at the same time really support the drivers. So drivers also feel very happy because, you know, it's their business and they are, you know, talking about our company, you know, everywhere right now. So yes, a lot of users are very happy.
And even the part of the money that doesn't go, the minority of the money doesn't go to directly to the drivers, it's still being reinvested in their own
exactly.
businesses. It's
yep.
So it's ever self-contained mm-hmm. that there are no external investors profiting off their labor.
Right, exactly. 20% of the fare comes back to their company. Because we do need to operate, we do need to, you know, cover the insurance, we need to cover the POC annual fee to keep up with our license and other administrative fee. So yes, you know, and we actually are very transparent and with where we are financially. So once actually our board members get elected, you know, within a couple of weeks, and there will be more training offer to all of the new board members as well. So yeah, I think our goal is to make a very transparent company where, you know, workers and the riders, you know, feel very content.
And investing in capacity, that's huge. Have you heard stories from individual drivers about how this change has affected their daily work experience or their families? Do you have any stories to share?
Yeah, so, you know, one of our leaders told me, you know, when actually there was a very first rider who walked into his car, you know, he said he almost cried. And he also told me later on that I'll never cry if I drive for other companies. But I was very emotional to see the very first rider walking into my car. And that is kind of the different feeling that our drivers are feeling right now. And I think that kind of feeling comes because they have a deep commitment to this company and their company. So I think the way that the drivers, you know, feel about this co-op is a very, very different stories. And then some of the drivers are only driving for us. And those drivers have a lot of stories because those drivers will actually do their best to pick up whoever needs service. If they actually work for other company, perhaps that will not happen. But because it's their company, it's and that happens a lot with our drivers. Why? Because they want to do a good job. So they are, you know, they'll do best to, you know, make sure that the ride happens.
And what lessons from this project could be applied to other sectors or gig economy platforms?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so RMLC actually has another cooperative incubation project, Home Care Cooperative. So this Home Care Cooperative is going to be statewide. And one of the ideas is to also utilize the platform to make it easier for clients to get workers using the platform. So we are at this stage of exploring what it looks like. So I do think that drivers co-op is one case, but if you really look at other gig workers, for example, food delivery is another big sector that now, you know, if we are stabilized this function, perhaps we may also move on to, or we could actually add other platform cooperatives with the food deliveries with the restaurant. And there are many different things that, you know, we can do using the platform. And another thing is a platform for gig workers and all these independent contractors and a professional who wants to utilize the platform. So there are a lot of different platform cooperatives that are emerging right now. And so that is exciting.
Very exciting. And how do you see worker cooperatives fitting into the future of work, especially as traditional employment models continue to evolve?
Well, that's why, so right now, you know, the traditional employment is is changing, right, to a platform economy where everybody actually becomes sort of the gig workers nowadays, and over 35% of actually American workforce right now is independent contractors and, you know, gig workers. So using that sort of the trend, the key point is that how are we going to actually use a worker co-op as a strategy to organize gig workers? And there are many ways. Labor unions are also working really hard to organize gig workers as well. But forming a worker co-op is one of the best way to organize gig workers. That's why I'm very fascinated to work in this field, because this is one of the best way to give ownership to workers. And actually, that could be one of the best potentials a way to empower workers right now. So that's why I think that the U.S. has a trend of organizing more worker co-ops with a lot of gig workers and informal workers. And that is very encouraging. And I can definitely see more growth in the future as well.
And what role do you think employee ownership could play in addressing income inequality and economic concentration? Mm-hmm.
So worker co-ops, actually, if you really look at the worker co-ops, the tenure of employment through a worker co-op is very, very high. So that is a promising, right? You know, while, you know, a lot of people move jobs from one company to the other, worker co-ops has shown more consistency in terms of keeping the workers. One example is actually the home care workers and drivers as well, right? I do believe that these drivers will not go away, right? And they will be part of this driver's co-op for long term, because this is a better way to keep their income higher, but at the same time, giving them that ownership. Same thing with, you know, home care workers. You know, a lot of home care industry suffer from the lack of keeping the good workers. But if you actually give ownership to home care workers, that's another way to sustain the longer employment for everybody. And that is also good for the client as well. So I can definitely see that a worker co-op is a better way to improve the economic conditions of you know, gig workers and informal workers, but at the same time, this is a better way to also increase a more fair equity for the peoples. Because again, right now there is a movement that a lot of low-wage workers and marginalized community members can create a co-op. In this way, we can actually shift how actually we can seek a more economic justice, you know, for everybody. And worker co-op is one of the best way to do so.
And it's sharing the pie.
Exactly.
They're helping to bake.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And what have been the biggest challenges in getting the driver's co-op off the ground and maintaining its operations? How do you compete with the massive marketing budgets and network effects of established rideshare companies?
Yeah, that is a challenge of not having a huge budget for marketing. And we wish actually we could have a more marketing budget so that more people know about our driver's co-op. But that is not the case right now. So what we do is that we utilize our worker members to really spread the word to their network and to riders that they may actually talk to. And, you know, so that's kind of how we've been running. And of course, that has been a better challenge. But we have, a lot of drivers. And hopefully, you know, with that networking, we can actually spread the word to other community members as well. But yes, not having enough funding is a challenge for us, for sure.
And have there been any unexpected challenge that emerged after the co-op began operations?
Yeah, one of the things that actually we have realized since we launched our app in July 2025 was that other companies may play price to lower the price so that not many riders will utilize our cooperative service. That is a kind of a new phenomenon that we are finding. So we are trying to tackle what could be the best way to go about it. Because we do believe that our cooperative really support to keep money in the local economy. but without support from other community members, we may keep facing challenges. So this is a kind of one of the egg and chicken dilemma that I mentioned. But again, as a small alternative cooperative, we are facing a much bigger challenge. So yes, we do need more, we can get more support from the community, but we are also facing some externals competition.
And can you give examples what kind of partnerships or community support would be fundamental to the project's development?
I think, you know, if any platform cooperative with a large scale, like the driver's co-op, to be successful, I think we do need a lot of people. We do need a lot of drivers who believe in the mission that this kind of local ownership is a good thing for them. But we also need a lot of riders and community supporters who say, yes, this is a better way to keep money here in the local economy. But at the same time, we do need also support from the government officials who see what we are bringing to the table. So I definitely see that, you know, we do need a lot of multi-stakeholders who really believe in this project. And we just cannot be successful with having only one sector of the party, right? You know, we just cannot make it successful. We have thousands of drivers, but if no riders is using, it's not going to work. So I definitely see that this kind of big project need a much big scales of support. So we have a long way to go, but it's exciting.
Absolutely. And what are your hopes for the driver's co-op over the next few years? Mm-hmm. What would success look like?
Yeah, we've been actually punching a lot of numbers right now. But if we actually increase our ride, we'll be self-sufficient within a couple of years. Right now, you know, most funding come from a local foundation, thankfully. But within a couple of years, if our ride number goes up, we should be able to be self-sufficient. What this means is that actually our cooperative will actually turn more profits within 2-3 years with more support coming from the community. That means that more money will go to drivers, but at the same time, drivers co-op will be able to reinvest in that profits to supporting other projects as well. So we hope that the self-sufficiency happens in the near future. And that is our goals right now.
And what advice, you mentioned there are a lot of other cities, other regions are interested in expanding this model. What advice would you give to drivers in other cities who might be interested in exploring a similar cooperative model?
Yeah, we actually get a lot of requests right now from everywhere. So one way that we are doing is to create a network or a federation of the drivers co-op. So we are actually coming together with some driver leaders from different cities. Although it may take a while, I think that model will be actually exciting for everybody, so that we can create a system of support to each other. So that is happening. For other cities, I think that it's really important to have some of the key driver leaders who believe in this mission and keep working to create that cooperative structure. And our Colorado will be very happy to provide any additional support that is needed. But yes, we do need some of the key driver leaders who are committed to creating the cooperative. And at the same time, we do need a few nonprofits, such as co-op development organizations in different cities that will actually support drivers. So if we have one or two, I think that's good to go.
So really, it's about networking and uniting voices in different sectors, from the public sector, private sector, users, workers, be aligned in this mission and a different vision for the future of work. Mm-hmm. But what do you think people most misunderstand about worker cooperatives or employee ownership?
That's a good question. I think that a lot of people have this misperceptions that cooperative will not work, and cooperative is very small. Well, look at the drivers co-op. We have 1,000 members right here. And that can work. It's just all matter about how we're going to create a transparent governance system. So we are doing it. So worker co-ops are small in reality, but there are big worker co-op as well. And that is our goal, right? To scale up the cooperative in the future. And everybody in this sector is working toward that goal.
I had the pleasure of visiting the Caviro Group in Italy, it's one of the largest wineries in the country, and they aggregate over 14,000 producers. 14,000 producers, and became one of the cooperative powerhouses in their economy. And yes, it's definitely a misconception that co-ops are something small. People often forget that our local credit unions are cooperatives, are financial co-ops. A lot of the utility services are provided by large electric co-ops in this country. And we have even larger agricultural cooperatives providing food on the table of many, many American families. So it's definitely not just a local small project and have this potential of economies of scale.
Now, another misconception is that once actually the co-op become bigger, that will be purchased by other bigger company with a venture capital.
That is actually a
misconception, I think. So, you know, again, some of that may happen, but the reality is that there are ways that a co-op can continue to grow. And that it doesn't have to be, you know, purchased by other companies. So there is no sort of the limitations in terms of the looking at the size. Co-op can be small, co-op can be big, as you said. It just all matter of what economy model works best for that entity and also for the community. And I do believe that the cooperative economy will always thrive, especially during the economic crisis. You know, that is a sort of the resilience that we are bringing. This is a people's economy. Cooperative is actually coming from that fundamental that actually people run the economy and we should be the center of it. So that's why I think that the cooperative and any kinds of EO models, not only just a worker co-op or platform co-op, other employee ownership model will continue to grow right here in the United States.
And is there anything else about this project that we haven't covered, but you think it's important for people to understand?
There are a lot of things that can be done. But if you are interested in, you know, retiring, but, you know, if you are interested in, selling your business to employees, you know, please know that there are many different local organizations that are supporting. And also, if you're interested in supporting local initiative, I think that's really good. And I'd like to see more of those local economy thriving everywhere right here in Colorado.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This was such a pleasure. And I really hope to see that we can build a healthier market.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Yeah, it was my pleasure as well.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to Looks Like New.
You have been listening to Looks Like New on KGNU's It's the Economy. Looks Like New is a show that asks all the questions about new technology, coming to you from the Media Economies Design Lab at the University of Colorado Boulder, and is produced by Alexander Lipka. You can find us on the fourth Thursday of every month on air or online at lookslikenew.net or wherever you get your podcasts. We hope you'll join us next month. Thank you for listening.